Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Our 30-minute program is designed for people learning English. Today, Alice Bryant brings us the program Everyday Grammar. We also hear about what's trending today from Mario Ritter. And Kelly Jean Kelly presents America's Presidents. But first, this news. A gunman opened fire at a crowded bar in Southern California Wednesday night, killing 12 people and wounding many others. The Borderline Bar and Grill in Thousand Oaks is popular among local college students. It was holding its weekly country music and dance night at the time of the shooting. Police have identified the suspected killer as 28-year-old Ian David Long, a former Marine. He was found dead in the office of the Borderline after reportedly having shot himself. Ventura County Sheriff Jeff Dean told reporters Thursday that Long had served in Afghanistan. Dean said Long reportedly used a handgun in the attack. The gun had a special device that permitted it to hold more bullets than usual. The device is illegal in California. There was no known motive for the shooting, Dean said. He added, obviously, he had something going on in his head that would cause him to do something like this. It is the latest mass killing in the United States and comes less than 2 weeks after 11 people were killed in a shooting at a Jewish religious center. It also marks the deadliest mass shooting in the country since 17 people were killed earlier this year at a high school in Parkland, Florida. The Borderline Bar is popular with students of California Lutheran University, Pepperdine University, and other area schools. 19-year-old Cole Knapp was inside Borderline at the time of the shooting. He told the Reuters news agency that he saw the shooter enter the bar and stop at the counter. Then, Knapp said, he heard gunfire and saw a young woman at the counter shot repeatedly. Knapp said, it took a couple of seconds for people to realize what was going on. And once that happened, it was just utter chaos. Sergeant Ron Hellis of Ventura County Sheriff's Office was the first law enforcement officer to arrive at the Borderline Wednesday night. He was shot inside and later died at a hospital. Dean said he believed about 150 to 200 people were inside the bar at the time of the shooting. It could have been much, much worse, he said. Thousand Oaks is a wealthy area about 60 kilometers northwest of Los Angeles. The website Niche named it the third safest city in the United States in 2018. Dean told reporters Thursday, I've learned it doesn't matter what community you're in. It doesn't matter how safe your community is. It can happen anywhere.
This is what's trending today. Are you unhappy with your age? Do you feel younger than your age? Well, perhaps you should consider legally changing your birth year. That is what a Dutch man is trying to do. Emil Rottelbond is a television host. he works as an expert in positivity. But he says that his age is having a negative effect on his ability to find work and love. So Rattelbond went to court to get his birth year legally changed from 1949 to 1969. He told the court that he did not feel comfortable with his age. He said he self-identified as 20 years younger. Rattelbond says he wants to avoid age discrimination in society. He says that when he asks for a mortgage, they say it's impossible. He complains that when he tries to get dates on a dating site called Tinder, he only gets women his age, in their late 60s. He says that with his youthful face and an age of 49, he would get more dates, possibly with younger women. He told the Associated Press on Thursday, "With this freedom of choice, choice of name, freeness of gender, I want to have my own age. I want to control myself." Marjolein van den Brink specializes in human rights and gender issues at Utrecht University. She said, "It's quite clear that elderly people have a much smaller chance of getting a job than younger people." However, she says that age is different from the issues involved in reassigning gender. Age discrimination, she says, happens only at certain points in your career, usually between 40, 50, or 60 years of age. Whereas gender is something that follows you from birth to grave, she said. Rattelbond says the Dutch government could benefit if it were to accept his age demand. He says he would be happy to give up his monthly pension of around $1,370. That would be a savings of $343,000 over the 20 years for the government. The court in the city of Arnhem is expected to issue a ruling in about 4 weeks. And that's what's trending today.
If you are driving a car, you will probably see many traffic or road signs. They provide information about how fast to go, which way to turn, and whether a road ends or begins. Languages also have signs that provide direction when speaking to others or writing. In English, we call these words discourse markers. Think of them as road signs for language. We use discourse markers to signal a beginning or end of a conversation, list the order of ideas, react to a speaker, change the subject, and do other things. In other everyday grammar programs, we talked about such markers as you know, well, and okay. Today, we will examine a few uses of discourse markers in informal, natural speech. Some are used only in informal speech, while others are for formal writing and speech. You hear and see informal markers in conversations, text messages, songs, classrooms, and on broadcast programs and social media. Let us hear how they sound in a short conversation between two friends. In the following exchange, you will hear the markers, hey, by the way, let's see, and so. Think about the purpose of each one.
Hey, Tasha, how's it going?
Good. I haven't seen you in weeks. How have you been?
Busy, but great. By the way, what are you doing tomorrow night?
Let me see. I am planning on voting tomorrow afternoon, but we'll be free after that. What did you have in mind?
So there is a book signing at Dream Bean Coffee House tomorrow at 6 o'clock. Want to come?
That sounds great.
Did you catch the purpose of each? The word hey is used to get the attention of the listener. In this case, it is also a very informal way of saying hello. English speakers use by the way and so to lead into a statement or question. But the words by the way inform the listener of a change in direction of the conversation. Lastly, the words let's see show that the speaker is trying to remember something. Now, let's talk about four uses of discourse markers. I just used one in the last sentence. Did you catch it? It was the word now. We use it and other words and phrases to mark the start of a conversation or announce an idea. Now can introduce the idea or show a change in subject. In everyday grammar programs, you have heard us use the markers now, okay, so, and all right. These all tell the listener to pay attention because the speaker may offer a new piece of information. Some of the same markers are also used to end a conversation. For example, one might use the words okay or all right to inform the listener you will soon finish what you are saying. Take a listen.
Just saw your message. All right, I'm late for a meeting. I will call you later. I have got to go.
Another word we often use is anyway. Here is the same example with that word.
Just saw your message. Anyway, I'm late for a meeting. I will call you later. I have got to go.
Now let's turn to useful words and phrases for changing the subject. Notice I used now to move to another part of today's subject. You may have noticed the flexibility of some discourse markers. Some have more than one use, but be careful. Others do not. Anyway is an example of a flexible marker. English speakers not only use it to suggest a conversation's end. We also use it to signal that we will start talking about something else. And, as you heard earlier, by the way is an effective phrase for quickly changing direction. Another phrase is, that reminds me. When someone has just said or done something that helps us remember something else, one might say, that reminds me. Here is how it might be used.
Hey, do you know what the dinner special is?
Yeah, it's teriyaki chicken.
Oh, that reminds me. I forgot to take the chicken out of my freezer.
Other discourse markers assure speakers that the listener is paying attention to what they are saying. They show interest in, surprise at, excitement for, or agreement with what the speaker is saying. Words that show interest include, yeah, and I see. "Oh, really?" and "really" usually show surprise. And "exactly" and "right" show agreement. Here's an example of a speaker showing agreement.
"I hate riding the 43 bus. It is crowded and really stinks."
"Exactly. That is why I take the train."
Okay, well, now that you have learned some road signs of the English language, we hope you will drive safely. I'm Alice Bryant.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about William Jefferson Clinton, better known as Bill Clinton. Clinton took office in 1993 and was re-elected in 1996. In many ways, historians consider his time in office a success. The economy expanded, and the country was largely at peace. But Clinton had some notable failures, too. He could not persuade Congress to accept a plan to reform the nation's health care system. And in his second term, the House of Representatives took steps to remove him from office. But the Senate decided not to act. Clinton finished his second term with high approval ratings. Yet, he is also remembered for being only the second U.S. president to be impeached. Bill Clinton came from a town with a memorable name, Hope. He grew up there and in another nearby town in the southern state of Arkansas. For most of his early life, Bill was raised by his grandmother and his mother, both nurses. His father had died in a car accident before he was born. People who knew Bill as a young man remember him as very intelligent, charming with people, and talented in music. His mother told him he would be president one day. Sure enough, Clinton pursued activities that would lead to a political career. He attended college at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C., where he studied international affairs, led student government groups, and took a position as a clerk in the U.S. Senate. He went on to study at Oxford University in England on a prestigious Rhodes Scholarship. Then he graduated from law school at Yale University. There, he met another student who would be his wife, Hillary Rodham. The two went on to have one child together, a daughter named Chelsea. After finishing his studies, Clinton returned to his home state of Arkansas and pursued political office. At 32, he became one of the youngest governors ever in the country. 2 years later, he was voted out of office and, as historian Russell Riley notes, he became the youngest former governor. And that is how a good deal of Clinton's political career continued, in a pattern of successes and failures. His successes often came as a result of his centrist policies, which appealed to people of different political beliefs. He also was an effective public speaker and, to many, a likable, charismatic person who seemed to care deeply about others. But, his critics pointed out, Clinton also appeared to make many decisions simply for political advantage. And he sometimes tried to please so many people that he pleased no one. Following a series of increasingly national roles, as well as a series of setbacks, Clinton campaigned for president in 1992. At first, he did not do well in the campaign. He was young and not well known. He also suffered from reports that he had relationships with women who were not his wife. But in time, Clinton began winning primary contests. Reporters called him the comeback kid. He earned a public image as a politician who could survive problems. In the general election, Clinton competed against the sitting president, Republican George H.W. Bush. The two men also faced an unusually strong third-party candidate named Ross Perot. On election night, Clinton prevailed. Because Americans had split their votes among three major candidates, Clinton earned less than 50% of the popular vote. But he won enough electoral votes to become the next U.S. president. The people who worked on Bill Clinton's presidential campaign adopted an informal motto. They said, "It's the economy, stupid." In other words, campaign officials believed that most Americans cared primarily about how a president's policies would affect their financial concerns. So President Clinton quickly set about making a series of economic changes. They included raising taxes on wealthier Americans and cutting spending to help poorer Americans. In a few years, the U.S. budget deficit was gone, the federal government had a surplus, and the country's financial situation was strong and healthy, although not everyone approved of the steps Clinton took to get there or believed he should get all the credit. Early in his first term, Clinton sought an additional reform he believed would help voters' financial concerns: affordable health insurance for all Americans. Most people in the U.S. either bought private health insurance or did not have any insurance to help pay for medical costs. Clinton wanted to find a way for the U.S. government to support Americans' health-related expenses. He appointed his wife, First Lady Hillary Clinton, to lead a health care reform effort. Hillary Clinton, a lawyer, had led a similar effort to reform education in Arkansas when her husband was governor there. But some lawmakers in Congress, as well as some voters, rejected her efforts. The reform effort failed. Clinton also struggled in some early foreign policy moves. He withdrew American troops from Somalia after their humanitarian efforts there turned into a bloody military struggle. He was also criticized for failing to intervene quickly in the genocide in Rwanda, where hundreds of thousands of people were killed. Later, Clinton won praise for some of his foreign policy. His government helped restore the elected president in Haiti after a coup. It also helped negotiate peace agreements in Bosnia and Ireland. And it cooperated with NATO to intervene in the Kosovo area and stop attacks on Albanians there. In general, Clinton believed the U.S. had an important role to play in maintaining peace and protecting human life around the world. At the same time, he did not want to use too many American resources to do so. He aimed to cooperate with other nations and to set moderate goals. As usual, Clinton adopted an approach that was not too extreme on one side or another. During most of his time as president, Clinton had been under investigation. Federal judges had appointed a special counsel, named Kenneth Starr, to find out if the president had committed any crimes related to financial investments before he took office. During the investigation, Starr learned that the president had been having a sexual relationship with a young woman who worked in the White House. Starr asked Clinton about the affair under oath. Later, Starr accused Clinton of lying about his relationship with the woman. Starr said that Clinton had also tried to prevent others from telling the truth about some of his activities. In time, the president publicly admitted the relationship, and he apologized to voters and his family. But he said he had not lied or told anyone else to lie for him. Lawmakers in the House of Representatives did not accept Clinton's defense. They advanced two articles of impeachment. Lawmakers in the U.S. Senate then considered the case. It is their job to examine the evidence and decide whether to remove a president from office. A majority did not believe the actions Clinton was accused of were serious violations against the country. They voted to acquit Clinton of the charges and permit him to continue as president. In the U.S., a president can serve only two full terms. After his second, Bill Clinton and his wife settled in a town outside New York City. In time, Hillary Clinton became the U.S. Senator from New York, as well as a Secretary of State and the Democratic Party's candidate for president. Bill Clinton, like many other U.S. presidents, wrote about his experiences and helped develop his presidential library. He also worked on humanitarian, health, and economic issues with his family's organization, the Clinton Foundation. For many, Clinton's time in office is remembered as a mixed experience. The economy was at one of its strongest in U.S. history. Most people could find jobs, and many Americans bought homes for the first time. In the mid-1990s especially, the internet and other new developments created a technology boom. In addition, Clinton was an effective public speaker, and he inspired new groups of people to support his Democratic Party. Many voters approved of his appointments of women and minorities to positions of power in his government. They also liked the steps he took to reduce the use of handguns, protect the environment, and provide paid time off work for some people to care for themselves or their families. But both Democrats and Republicans found fault with some of Clinton's efforts. And even his supporters note that the president had to spend much of his time in office answering charges of wrongdoing. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
That's our show for today. For VOA Learning English, I'm Katie Weaver. Thanks for listening.